Well, it's easy enough to say. When energy costs more, you want to use less. And the best way to get more for less is to cut out waste, and pretty soon you're talking design. Good morning, and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel, and we're talking green building today. What are the materials, and who knows how to work with them, and do they work in Alaska? Our number 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@alaskapublic.org. The author of The Philosophy of Sustainable Design is with us today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again has a better chance of regaining strength and energy between pregnancies. Her baby is more likely to be born on time and at a good weight. So talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies and ask for the state's free birth spacing booklet. Take the time to build a strong and healthy family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
So it's in the dead of winter when the Alaska Forum on the Environment happens. That's about a vague enough title that it could be just about anything, but what it turns out to be is like a lot of the nonprofits, the environmental organizations, the Environmental Protection Agency, so there's government, the nonprofits and environmental organizations and the various guests and consultants and so forth that come in for this big powwow gathering that goes on for several days in Anchorage. For a journalist, it's an exciting thing, especially if your beat is something like energy efficiency. It's where I found out that RuralCap, for instance, was getting some economies of scale into the wind power generation. It's one of our most hopeful power generation scenarios in Alaska, is to use the copious amount of wind we have in some rural coastal locations. But the thing is, wind doesn't match up with your load. You use the power at times when the wind might not be moving the turbine, so you have to expand it, and that's where the economies of scale come in, and where RuralCap, and we've done shows on this, is starting to power places like laundromats and things like that through the same system, so that the electrical power is then in effect stored. And it's I also found out about how they're trying to master tidal energy in the silty currents situations in Alaska. We've done shows on that. And there seems to be an endless and an inexhaustible appetite for discussion of energy efficiency because of the high cost of energy in Alaska, even though we're an energy-providing state. So here we are again, and we're talking about the places where we live. And our guest is Jason McLennan, the CEO of the International Living Future Institute and author of The Philosophy of Sustainable Design. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jason.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. You gave a speech at the Alaska Forum yesterday, right?
I did.
How did it go down?
Well, I had a good time. And from the looks of the people in the audience, so did they.
They were avidly interested in the subject, usually.
Yeah, there was great interest. A lot of folks came up after the talk and wanted to hear more and gave me their business card and wanted our help. So that's a good sign.
Yeah. Well, I get lost in all the alphabet soup here. You've got the International Living Future Institute. You've got this book. And then you also have this Cascadia Green Building Council.
Yes.
Okay. Tell me what that is.
So there's two NGOs that I run. One is the Cascadia Green Building Council, and it promotes green building across Alaska as well as British Columbia, Washington, and Oregon. More recently, we created another organization, the Living Future Institute, which is really to take the ideas and the programs we've created and spread them to many different places outside of our region. And so we have projects now in many other countries as well as in the United States and Canada. So those are the two organizations.
Do you think... here you are in Alaska, and people have been telling you their tales, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people like to say about Alaska, well, we've got third world conditions here. And I'm wondering, I mean, in some ways they're right. In some ways we're in a situation, a design ripe situation, where, you know, we get a chance to do it right to start with.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunities in Alaska, and as you pointed out, high energy costs and a lot of need, and you also have a lot of resources. So in many ways, the opportunities in Alaska are greater than just about anywhere else in the United States.
Well, I think it's time to talk to your partner here, Mark Masteller. Mark, you're working with Cascadia now, right?
Yeah, Steve, I'm the Alaska Director for Cascadia Green Building Council, so I'm part of that program of the Living Future Institute that is Cascadia, and I deal with the Alaska operations.
And Mark, you're a longtime believer in this this business of doing it through design. You know, I've been watching you, Mark.
Absolutely. You know, there's so many opportunities first to not use energy. In other words, to through the built environment to conserve and use energy efficiently. And once, you know, when you do all those things, you can move to a world that's powered by renewable energy. But if you don't do the conservation and energy efficiency first, you can't get to that renewable energy world.
Yeah. Okay, I think this is the point where I want to bring this up. This is the ambush question. You guys are really agents of the UN, aren't you? This is really part of Agenda 21, isn't it? Huh? I can see you guys are turning red right now.
Pretty funny. No, we're agents for change and a positive future for Americans and our energy security.
It's also a great way to save a lot of money.
That's true.
Yeah, especially with the high cost of energy in Alaska. You know, we need to do a lot of things quickly to reduce the costs. And this is like one of the best ways to spend money to save a lot of money.
Well, so Cascadia's got an illusion thing that's going on in Alaska right now. You're trying to come up with what? A replicable housing design suitable for that strange climate.
Sure. Let me talk about the genesis of that just a little bit. The Aleutian Housing Authority, which, you know, they were looking far ahead, a very, very foresighted group. They said, hey, we need to look at an affordable home that uses way less energy. And so they approached us to do a design, to run a design competition for them. And we worked out the details. We said, look, if we're going to run this, the building has to meet the Living Building Challenge standards, which we can talk about later, but basically net zero energy, net zero water, et cetera, and it needs to be an affordable home. And in the Aleutians, the current home they build is around $400,000 for a 1,200-square-foot, three-bedroom, one-bath home. So we set up a design competition, and the hope, you know, we didn't know how many people were gonna compete or whatever, but when we went through the registration period, 192 teams from 24 countries registered projects. So
you were letting foreigners into this?
Absolutely. We were encouraging foreigners because we want to get design ideas from all over. In fact, I'm one of the folks that thinks we've got a lot to learn from Canada and Northern Europe about how we can build in this part of the world because, quite frankly, a lot of the stuff we've been building in the lower 48 and in Alaska is built for cheap fossil fuel and cheap water. And those days are over. So now we've got over 100 good entries, and the next steps.
You have 100 entries?
Absolutely. Yeah, we had 192 teams enter, but...
But they haven't gotten a penny for this yet.
No, and they have most of them won't get anything.
Yeah. And the Aleutian Housing Authority is putting up a $35,000 first-place prize and $15,000 second-place, but more importantly, the Aleutian Housing Authority has committed to working with the winner to actually build the winning design, and that is a really critical thing. So I want to give a shout out to the Aleutian Housing Authority for having this kind of foresight. They're taking a risk, and they're getting some great rewards right now.
Well, yeah, and as I was saying about RuralCap, there's the economies of scale. It comes a point. In other words, if you work the bugs out of how do you get your wind generator to also get into the storage situation, so you have a more distributed situation for your load. Then you could do that in other villages.
Absolutely.
And the same thing. I mean, the climate in the Aleutians is uniformly wretched wherever you go in the Aleutians. You know, you got the nasty sideways snow, and it doesn't usually get terribly cold, but it, you know, you get a lot of wind, and I would think that would be a big challenge for a builder.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of wind is a lot of energy. I spent the first year of my time in Alaska in 1981 in the Aleutians on ADAC, and it's got
so you were in the Navy?
Well, I was on the Navy base. Uh-huh. I was working for Fish and Wildlife Service, but they've got a lot of wind.
You were managing the elk there?
Well, there's caribou.
Caribou, right, yeah.
And they get a lot of wind, but they also get a lot of sun. In the times, like in the winter especially, get a lot of sun. And as you mentioned, the temperatures in the Aleutians aren't quite as extreme as other parts of the state.
Right.
But this is the great thing. With the Living Building Challenge, these designers are going to be taking the resources that exist on the site. We actually have a building site. We have a building we're going to replace. They have a local site they're going to work with, and they have to work with the energy systems that are there, the natural energy systems that are there. It's going to be really fascinating.
And you really are talking zero net energy?
Correct? Absolutely.
And you're telling me this is doable in Alaska conditions?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
All right, now, you can't get to zero energy, right?
Well, it's not that there isn't energy being used. It's just that it's net zero energy, meaning that no fossil fuels being used. So it's using renewable energy for the energy use that is required. But efficiency is the first step, as Mark was saying, and the buildings that are designed to meet the challenge typically are using 60 to 80% less energy than their counterparts to begin with. So you're talking about meeting maybe 20% of the requirement, what's typical.
So a lot of it you just do structurally?
Well, through good design, good detailing, good materials.
I've been told the big thing is get enough insulation.
Well, that's a big part of it.
And then get a bunch of it underground so that you don't have the extremes.
Well, that's one strategy.
And then what? And then heat pumps? What do you do then?
Heat pumps is another strategy. There's a lot of different ways to make this work. And that's really the strength of a competition. I mean, what they could have done is hired a single firm to produce a prototype. And instead, the strategy is to cast a wide net and reach out to the best minds in the world and say, what we have right now is a challenge and an opportunity to build in this very unique place something that is very innovative, and give us your best ideas, and we'll build the best idea. And that's really gotten the community very excited, and our organization is tied in pretty heavily with the architecture and design community in many different places, so we were able to reach a wide audience, and they've responded.
Yeah.
So it's very exciting that in some ways, for a $35,000 prize, they've gotten about $1 million worth of design fees
right,
waived.
Yeah. Well, and plus, I'm just thinking in terms of the inventive capital that so many different outfits sat down and, started really getting down to the CAD counters or whatever it is you use these days to say, okay, well, I use a 2x12 here, and I use blueboard here, and whatever the materials are going to be, to get to that. I mean, somebody actually did that thinking. That's adding to our intellectual capital of the world here.
Absolutely.
They might find this handy later on for projects that they do. That's probably one of the reasons why they chose to make the investment to start with.
Yeah, the reason why so many of the best firms in the world are going after this is because they all want to be associated with the greenest projects possible in the world, and that really is what the Living Building Challenge represents, and that's an integral part of this competition, is how do you do this in the Aleutian Islands, how do you do it affordably, and how do you meet the standard, the Living Building Challenge, which is the world's most stringent green building standard. And so it's a question that every major architecture firm is grappling with, because they want to be seen as the most innovative firm in the world. And so this competition hits a very strategic sweet spot. And it's very, strategic that way.
Right. Well, it makes me think about the 1957 Chevy, which what they were after was the 1 horsepower per square inch. And they had to invent the overhead cam to do it.
Huh. Well, you put a challenge out there and you ask people to think about it, and amazing things come forward.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Innovation, the human spirit.
Well, by golly, this is fun. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. If you'd like to join our discussion with Mark and Jason, we're talking about energy-efficient residence design for a living future. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. Local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. And usually the calls start coming in, they say, well, how do I get one of these? Where do I start?
Stay tuned.
Do you go down to your, building supply, or maybe you even come into Anchorage to go to the big building supply, and it's not too long before you find that the things that you need, they don't stock.
Well, some of them.
Because nobody ever asked for them. So then you have to go to your more specialty providers, which are starting to spring up now.
Some of the things. I think, though, the key thing that anybody who's working on their house, retrofitting it, needs to keep in mind is that there's always something that they can do with any budget. There's always something that they can do with any project to make it more high performing. So it may be that there are some bells and whistles that indeed they can't find locally. But making sure that your building is weather tight, caulking and sealing it, well, those supplies are around. Making sure that you have properly insulated your attic, your crawl space, that you are looking for ways to further improve the efficiency of your envelope, well, those materials are around too. So there's a lot of things that anyone can do that they can find, around their local community or get pretty inexpensively. And of course, there's some really neat stuff further afield.
And I think some of the state programs that have been in place now for 3 or 4 years, the weatherization rebate programs, are tremendously helping move all of this forward. And
boy,
those materials are out there. There's money to do it. And mainly there's an emphasis on conservation and efficiency that wasn't there before, because it's really the cheapest energy source we can go after. So the state has done a lot of great things to move things forward.
Well, I have to say, I lived in a place that was off the grid for a while, and in Alaska, and I didn't dwell in it, but I was in it enough to know that the first thing, it was on a 12-volt system, and we could burn wood. And we did get fuel for the generator, because every once in a while you have to fire up the generator to keep your 12-volt system, if you don't get enough off of the solar or whatever. But the first thing that I learned was you have to operate this building, which is essentially taking responsibility for it. And this is the very thing, I think, that ever since the post-war era in the United States, Americans have been educated out of.
That's true.
Yeah. That
with everything.
we get these Levittowns, cookie-cutter houses, and Levittown actually looks pretty good now. If you go back and look at Levittown, it don't look bad. But it was all about, convenience. It was about not having to think about these things, that people who had lived through a depression and then wartime, some even through two wartimes, had always had a life of deprivation, hard work and scrabbling to get by, and all of a sudden they could relax and take it easy and have better things for the younger generation. Last thing they wanted this younger generation to think about was, keeping the woodpile high and stuff like that. No, they were going to go on to college and to greater things in professional life. And so now the cycle has come back around. And we realize, no, actually, there never is a time when you don't take responsibility.
Or when if you don't take responsibility, then there are these unintended consequences that impact all of us. And we have become addicted to pushing a button, turning a dial, and that's pretty much the extent of our involvement in the built environment. And you could say the same about our food production systems as well. We don't really think about what we eat and where it comes from and the impacts associated with it. We just want to go to the grocery store and open the freezer and grab the thing.
Yeah. Well, one of the first people to get on the state energy audit program. And so that allowed us to just look at everything and go in there and do the blow test that they do and, find out we have a big hole in our ceiling we didn't realize. And holy mackerel, boy, did we ever need to blow the insulation in there. Fortunately, it's a small structure. And one of the things we did was get a demand water heater. And it was we ended up, thankfully, getting a Navien, which is good. But it turned out that it was a little bit of an older Navien, and it croaked on us. We were without hot water until yesterday. And it took the plumber forever to deal with it, because they had to go back to the Navien people, and the Navien people said, you need to replace the board. We'll have to ship you a new board. But the thing is, I was saying, are you getting used to working with these? And he said, well, no, not really, because hardly anybody ever gets them. And I said, well, why is that? He says, well, frankly, they want that big fat tank so that they can run, everybody can take a shower at the same time. And I said, well, wouldn't it be just simpler for everybody not to take a shower at the same time? But it's actually to that level of waste.
Yeah.
But I think what you're getting at is human behavior is such that we need to
begin
to
think. They never thought about it.
Yeah.
They never got a chance to think about it. And the builders build buildings deliberately so they won't ever have to think about it. And then you're trapped in it. And all of a sudden you look at your power bill.
Mm-hmm. It's really common to oversize systems just in case.
Yeah.
And those oversized systems don't run as efficiently as a system that's sized properly, which is some of the training that we're starting to develop is, you know, how do you try to educate different sectors of the building professionals to think about things differently, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And they need to be convinced. There's many that have the best of intentions, but they're not sure the clients are ready for it.
But it's often. Yeah, and it's an industry that doesn't change quickly.
Yeah.
You know, real quick story. There's a builder in Fairbanks who lives in a net zero energy home. And he built it for himself, and it's got very thick walls and all that kind of stuff. But it's a net zero energy home in Fairbanks. And it wouldn't meet the living building challenge because he does burn wood sometimes. But it points out that where there's a will, there's a way. And also one thing that was really important to him is he's willing to put those upfront costs into that house to not have those long-term life cycle costs of energy bills and things like that. And he understands the math of that. But it's pretty difficult sometimes for other folks to do that with that upfront cost. But I think the point for me is that it's possible to do this in harsh climates. Part of it is the will to do the right thing.
Let's go to Clam Gulch. And Mike, welcome to Talk of Alaska, Mike.
Hey, thanks for the program. Great program.
Oh, you know, we love to talk about this stuff.
Well, we need to do things about it, too. And that's why I'm calling the... last issue of Mother Earth News had an interesting article about Earthships, and particularly giving Mike Reynolds a credit for starting some of this stuff. And we've got some folks around here that are interested and wanted to build one. My daughter wants to build one. A Willow King here in Kisilov has built one. But I was curious, they're off the grid, sustainable, recycling water. Are they suitable for Alaska? Do you have any notion? I think there's two or three others in the state. And I'll hang up and listen.
All right, Mike. Thanks a lot. Earthships, never heard of them. Jason, tell me about it.
Yeah, Michael Reynolds is one of the pioneers in the green building movement. He's been building really interesting deep green homes, primarily in the lower 48, often using scrap materials and earth sheltered construction, very innovative from that perspective. So really, he is, you know, gets a lot of credit for those that are following these issues. And so I think it's certainly suitable to look at his particular approach in Alaska. I'd say we sometimes think that some of the materials used, such as the tires, are not necessarily the best materials to use, but there's a lot of the design approach that we appreciate. And then there's other schools of thought as well that are equally valid. There's passive house standards related to, you know, extreme energy efficiency in terms of high-performance envelopes. The Living Building Challenge, which is our program, which is a more holistic program that looks at issues besides energy, in addition to energy, water issues and toxicity of materials, indoor air quality, site impacts, etc.
Oh, you got to look at that stuff.
You got to look at all of it. And so, you know, these are all good things to bring up.
All right. Thank you. Well, Clam Gulch, that's as far as we're going on that one because... We're going to talk to Bill in Kenai. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Bill.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, on similar lines, I heard one of your guests talking about costs and amortizing things out in this builder up in Fairbanks. I wonder if anybody there has got a couple of comments they might want to make, if they've looked at the numbers for incorporating these fairly expensive wood-burning furnaces into a heated slab or heated floor type of arrangement. I mean, some of those costs for installation, if you do it yourself and stuff, is $8,000-$12,000, maybe upwards of that, once you get a structure built around the thing. And then trying to offset that with, you know, say if you're heating a 1,300-1,500 square feet on up, maybe up to 2,600 if you're doing that with oil or gas. You know, how do the numbers compare? Has anybody done that math and taken a look at those costs and savings?
Mark, Jason, either one of you want to specific here?
We haven't done the math on that particular technology in that market, and really, I think the listener here is correct that you have to do the math for your particular place. So maybe somebody in that community has, but we haven't.
And there are some folks I know that have used wood-fired boilers. I think the important thing is to get back to the idea that...
Did they ever use the wood?
Oh, yeah, and that's where I was going with my comment, is that think first about spending your money on your building envelope so that you don't need a lot of wood or any kind of energy first. And do that math as well, because there's big wood-fired boilers that can use a lot of wood, et cetera. You've got to think about the cost of wood and the cost of getting the wood, et cetera. But if you put money into your building envelope so that you're not using energy, it doesn't matter what kind of energy you are using. You don't want to waste it.
And another thing I think I'll throw on this one that has come up a number of times when people start talking about wood fuel is... if we had a pellet plant, we might actually be getting further with this. I don't know. They're talking about them in Southeast now, I think.
And Fairbanks as well.
Yeah. Bill, that's what we got on wood fire so far.
Hey, one quick follow-up, if I may,
kind of
along the same veins, using stuff available to us here. What do you guys got to say about cordwood? You know, you end up with like a 15, 13... 16-inch wall and stuff.
Oh, it was a building.
I like that structure.
As a building supply. I've seen it used.
Yeah, I've seen it used. I've never built a cordwood structure myself. I'm not sure what the R value of the whole assembly is, and that's kind of the key factor, as well as making sure that infiltration losses are at a minimum. And there's a potential, depending on how well it's built, to have high infiltration losses. So it's something that... In a more harsh climate, you really need to take a look at whether it's the best application. And I wouldn't say that it's not a good application. I would really want to understand how it's being detailed, and the detailing is critical.
Yeah, I would think there could be a moisture barrier situation there, too.
It's possible.
Bill?
Good show. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you very much. More questions than answers so far. Let's go to Willow now and Matthew. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Matthew.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's You're welcome.
Kind of one of my passions.
Ah.
All talking about.
It's just amazing how motivated we get when the fuel truck pulls up and they hand you the bill.
Yeah, well, I don't have that option. I live off-grid in the woods, but I've been studying alternative building for several years now, and a lot of the alternative buildings actually old traditional building, such as the last caller mentioned with the cordwood. And I think a lot of it's just basic knowledge, basic skills that have been long forgotten, and much like building log homes. And I do that also. So I kind of like to challenge the status quo, blue board and Tyvek and all that. And I say leave that in its natural state. Stop burning energy to make that stuff, because there's a lot of natural resources that work just as well, and they're not poisonous to our environment and to us.
Some good points.
Yeah, well, I live in a log home. We did put moisture barrier and sheetrock in it. We have Cunnychuck that is just the logs. And certainly wouldn't, you know, that temperature goes up and down in there. It doesn't really need any anything beyond that. That works pretty nice. Yeah, I think sometimes KISS is really the way you want to go.
Yeah.
Well, simple before complex.
There's a good book out there that deals a lot with this. It's called The Natural House, and I just like to suggest that as a quick read for anybody to browse through. If you're thinking about trying to do yourself, it has lots of stuff. But, yeah, there's all kinds of methods and means. You just kind of have to look the ground around you and maybe some traditional stuff, and then interweave that with some of our modern technology. I mean, I'm not against technology. I just you know, like to know that I'm breathing clean air and stuff, and not a bunch of chemical residue leaching out of my home.
Well, thanks, Matthew. I enjoy hearing from Willow.
All right, thank you.
All right. Yeah, you know, Jason, he brought up a really interesting point, which is often you take a deeper look at indigenous building and you realize, like with the sod house, the traditional Alaska sod house, for instance, it's really got quite a lot going for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've turned our backs on some proven approaches, materials, strategies, and kind of discarded it when we really need to take another look. And so actually in the work that we do really promote alternative building wherever possible and have people understand what is climate-appropriate design, because it's the materials is one aspect of it. The other thing that we've forgotten is simple things like orientation, where the sun is and where it isn't, and prevailing breezes, passive solar strategies, natural ventilation. These are time-tested, you know, workable strategies that give you free energy, you know, really for free.
Well, I've heard about the situation in Fairbanks now where they get these inversions and we get the price of fuel went up and these people burning wood, and some people have bought these very efficient wood furnaces. And they throw lots of wood in there, but they burn really slow, and the emissions is not a good situation.
Yeah, they're actually not very efficient, and that's part of the issue. Is they get lots of emissions from those, and it's a critically bad situation in Fairbanks. Yeah,
yeah.
In
a way, sometimes you just overthink things.
Yeah.
Rather than just going with what the very simple. I think it was a good caller.
Matthew brought up another really good point about materials as far as toxins.
Yeah.
The building sector uses a lot of toxic materials right now. And this is one thing where the Living Building Challenge is really trying to move the bar quite a bit, just get away from toxic materials. And it's tough to do, but it's a critical thing to do. One of the reasons we have these ventilation requirements to keep enough fresh air coming into a building or whatever is because we're producing toxins right there in the building. We've got to get away from some of that stuff. And I don't know if, Jason, you want to go into some of the toxin parts of the Living Building Challenge, but this is one thing where the Living Building Challenge is really reaching out there and saying, we got a different way of doing business.
Well, let's do our break and then go to that very place as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from The Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com, and by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and BP.
It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about energy-efficient residence design for a living future for Alaska. Our email address is talk@alaskapublic.org, and our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. And with us is Jason McLennan of the International Living Future Institute and the Cascadia Green Building Council, and Mark Masteller, the Cascadia Green Building Council's Alaska Director. And we've gotten deep into it. And where we've gone is when you use these modern building materials, you sometimes are also dealing with toxins.
Absolutely.
If nothing else, you got this situation like Blue Board, like our caller from Willow was saying, well, somebody had to use energy to make that. You know, you've got these, you've introduced molecules in the environment that is not the best.
Yeah, and well, it goes beyond just the energy that, that went into making it. We actually have, in most modern materials, carcinogens, mutagens, endocrine disruptors. We're surrounding ourselves with chemicals that are incredibly harmful to human health, and in ways that we don't completely understand.
And when you seal a building up...
Well, sure. It ends up living with you, and that's a problem. But sometimes it's not just indoor air quality. It gets in our water supply. Some of these chemicals end up leaching into the soil and leaching into the groundwater, or even at a different stage in terms of when it was manufactured. There were chemicals used in the factories there, exposing the workers to those chemicals. And if there's a fire, what we find is even if you have some materials that are inert when in your house that don't off-gas, but they sure as hell do, can I say that, when there's a fire. If there's a fire, these things become very dangerous. And so our approach is really to say, well, let's take an approach where we try to eliminate the most toxic substances from our buildings to begin with. And if you don't have any of these carcinogens in our buildings, then we're better off. And it's hard to do that.
You guys are pretty, I mean, okay, you're liberal in a way. You're, could I say, understanding. When you talk about my blue board, you know, nobody frowns all that much. But nonetheless, that's not what you're pushing.
Well,
that's not what you're pushing. You've pushed this pretty far.
We are, but this is a nonpartisan subject, my friend. Right? This is
But still, no. Getting down deeper into it, though, what you're talking about, the standard that you're talking about is, you mentioned, for instance, well, this guy does have to burn wood. What? Wait a minute. Okay, so net zero energy, where would you get your energy if you didn't burn something? Well, you got some from your body heat, I suppose, the food that you eat and so forth.
There are sources of heat, yes, as you mentioned, but
and
primarily
the
sun, and in fact what we're promoting with the Living Building Challenge, and this is a program that goes way beyond LEED standards, etc. And we have projects now in 13 countries. We have 100 of these projects that are being built right now, in addition to the project in the Aleutian Islands, which will be a prototype. So these are not theoretical things. This is proven technology, proven to work. And all of the projects get 100% of their energy on a net annual basis. They're not all off the grid. They can be grid tied with renewable energy. So that typically means they're using geothermal or solar thermal. And photovoltaics for electricity, in some places wind, where there's wind capabilities, and sometimes even microhydro. So an interesting mix of things.
Hmm.
And I think then...
So I've heard about using heat pumps now to extract even small differentials. I mean, really?
Sure. We've got a couple... kind of commercial scale ground source heat pump systems in Alaska, the Juneau Airport and a school in Fairbanks, and many residential ground source heat pump systems now. And they're basically using this, it's not like a hot geothermal, it's using the ground's temperature and the fact that you can use a temperature differential and a refrigerant that'll boil or condense at certain temperatures to then create heat or electricity. So yeah, that's actually becoming more common in Alaska. You're even starting to see the same technology used for in seawater. So that the Sea Life Center in Seward now has a system that's using the temperature of the seawater to do the same kind of thing. But imagine if every coastal community can use seawater as a potential source of some energy. And I think this is the thing, is that you start to push this stuff out there, and you start to see great potential. But between sun and wind and seawater and geothermal, you know, we've focused on a few things that are in the ground, and they have high energy contents. Nobody's going to argue that fossil fuel doesn't have high energy content. But now we have to move to something different, and we have lots of those resources. And it's not going to be one silver bullet. It's going to be a mixture of sources, starting with conservation and efficiency first.
You're preaching the gospel
there
here, Mark.
You bet.
Well,
the other thing I wanted to mention, Steve, though, is that this Living Building Challenge doesn't have to work just on the building level. And one thing we're really excited about is start to think about this on a community level. And this is where we had some really good reaction to Jason's talk yesterday, was that start to think about a living community that has these same standards. And if you look into a rural community that has issues of what do we do with our human waste and what do we do with our garbage, et cetera, and you start to think about these closed-loop systems, removing toxins from the whole thing, it's a really exciting way to think about revitalizing or allowing rural communities to exist when a lot of folks are saying maybe they shouldn't exist, which is ridiculous.
So you're suggesting that the neighbors get together?
Absolutely.
Community.
And work like community.
You're just asking for trouble, pal.
There's a lot of communities that are interested in community. You're right, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And immediately you start getting bigger economies, just like when you get your windmill powering your laundromat.
That's right. And we're always looking for the ideal sweet spot where economics and performance align. And so typically that's not at a building scale. So if you can start to think about things in terms of a neighborhood scale, a district scale, or village scale, or campus scale, you can actually change the math pretty dramatically and make this look really good.
Well, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, I have experienced some condo association meetings, and these can be absolutely unbearable. I mean, I'm just wondering about the politics of this.
Well, you need to have a good shrink come to the meetings as well. But, you know, that's another radio program.
What is all? We all agreed on a covenant that we were going to have when it says
Yeah,
I mean, you know, and it's all pouting about, you know, hedges or something, you know. It's like
the color of the curtains.
Yeah, and here we are, you know, oh, well, he's not allowed to use that color. And we're talking about people agreeing on something far more substantive about a sustainable design that they're all going to agree to work with. And I think we do have to assume that there is some, like I was saying, responsibility, that people actually have to take responsibility for operating the system that they're going to put into place.
This is why we do what we do. I mean, what you're talking about is that there's a great need for education. There's a great need to get people to understand why this is important so they can have a more educated and aware dialogue that's meaningful about their communities and their buildings and their habitat, really.
So why can't we all just go down to Home Depot and buy the right kind of heat pump and just plug it in, damn it, and that'll take care of my house right there. What's stopping this?
Well, some of it is obviously there's this economic barrier.
The heat pump's going to cost a lot? It's going to cost me what, like a Mercedes Benz?
Well, and what we're saying is before you do the heat pump, there may be other things you should spend your money on first. And so, you know, this really...
But I think what we go and we find out is nobody makes quite the right heat pump for what I want to do with it.
Oh, there's... Everything we need is out there.
Yeah.
But it's knowing, trying to understand what it is that you need. Now, there's the question.
Yeah.
And most people don't have the training or knowledge to be able to answer that question.
What do you need? Carl and Homer, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Oh, brilliant program. I just love the dialogue and the ideas that are sprouting forth.
Sprouting forth. Okay.
It's not just the structure, but the illusions are pretty static in their climate and weather and assembly of the structure in a timely manner, as well as the disaster proofing, the possibility of hurricane winds and earthquakes and tidal waves. I wonder if that criteria is being considered with the design competition.
These boys are both nodding their heads.
Yep.
Just hang on. Go ahead.
Keep going, but
yes. Part of the question.
Like many, I am eagerly awaiting when we can peruse these designs in detail so that we can gain the knowledge that you all have had the pleasure of experiencing by getting these submissions. I'm jealous and envious to the nth degree. And
well, we're going to be sharing it all.
it's not just the design itself. It's the manufacturing. It's the recreation for the workers that manufacture these structures. It's the transportation dynamics that we need to change to incorporate assembling these in our remote locations with as little carbon footprint as possible. And having a demonstration project here in Homer out on the spit that was off-grid manufacturing these potential structures and having some kind of healthcare recreation facility for our workers. And hopefully there'll be a design competition for that one day.
Man, I'm telling you, I see you're dreaming. And plus, then you got the salty dog you can go to.
Well, there's other people that drink beverages other than what serves a salty dog. And there's other lifestyles, too, that not to diminish the benefits of the salty dog, but there's wide open world. Right now, in boat design,
I was just getting in a plug so I can get a free drink the next time I'm down in Homer. Give me a break, Carl.
They're developing a fuel cell for boats right now that's driven by urine. So instead of pissing overboard, you piss in the urine tank, and that creates your electricity for vessels. This is in the works, and it'll be realized in the near future.
Wow.
So the potential is out there.
Holy mackerel, that's the first I've heard of that one. But I do know a bunch of composters who would never dream of using a toilet. They say, but you do have to dilute it, apparently, because the worms and so forth, the microorganisms don't like it too hot. But Carl, had you guys heard about this urine conversion device?
No, not that one.
I haven't. No.
Yeah. But I think this gentleman ought to get involved in our work.
Absolutely.
I like his passion and the questions that he was bringing up are definitely in line with what we're promoting with this competition. It's not just the performance of the building. It is, we call the passive survivability of the structures that, you know, if there is, you know, issues that arise. On the islands, it is erection. How, you know, what is the best way to assemble and manufacture something that's suitable for that place and supports hopefully some local labor as well, etc. So I appreciated the call.
Carl, thank you so much for that call. Now let's go off to the Republic of Esther. Robert, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
The People's Republic. You have a good memory, Steve.
Indeed.
Well, you guys have been all over the map here this morning, and every time I think I'm going off in one little area of my knowledge, you bring up all kinds of other great subjects, and I have to gather my thoughts again. But basically, I think you're really on the right track as far as the holistic approach. I was down in the legislature in the early 80s, actually early late 70s, lobbying the rural areas for weatherization programs, which you would not have thought back then would have been a hard sell. But fuel oil in Fairbanks back then was 46 cents a gallon, and it made sense to build an energy-efficient house, which I did as an experiment, and lo and behold, it actually worked. And there were several of us that sat down back in those days trying to figure out how to educate the masses, if you will, how to build a better home. And some of the early pioneers, you may remember Bob Rogash, Mimi Burbidge is still at Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And we finally, after years and years of painful going and getting mortgages ourselves as we got older and had families and weren't getting any type of a return for building energy efficient house, we came up with a five-star program and things of that nature. And early on, a lot of the contractors really fought tooth and nail with the BEES program, as you remember, as far as energy efficient standards. But once we convinced them to use that as a marketing tool, as far as selling a home that people wanted, they did a 180 and became quite successful when people wanted an energy-efficient, quality-built home, and that got extended into the healthy home. And I think this needs to be actually pursued even more as far as all the other aspects of building green, because there's people out there who want this.
And yeah, I think since the days when you were trying to convince people, Robert, there's been a certain shock doctrine administered in the sense of, you know, $100 oil.
Well, the other thing that I think that actually has been a deterrent as far as the general overall population getting on board is now $4 a gallon for fuel oil isn't exactly cheap. But I lived in Japan in the 70s when it was gasoline was $4 a gallon in 1972 because they imported 99% of everything. And basically, everybody thinks there's some silver bullet out there as far as the cheap energy source. And I think that, you know, whether you burn wood, you have to look at it where you live. And in Fairbanks, We had probably the coldest weather winter here since I lived here. Came in here in 1970-71 winter.
Amen.
And there are folks up here that are really seriously, and this is not rhetorical, are seriously having to move. They cannot afford to stay here. GVA just raised their rates, the electric rates, 21%. And with the cost of fuel and the cold weather, people, especially those that are retired and on a fixed income, are seriously thinking of moving somewhere else. Right. Now, there's a real disparity between folks, low-income folks, middle class, so to speak, and people who can afford to go out and buy an energy-efficient green house. But somehow or another, we need to convey this to everyone that a green house is way more than just having a nice, comfy place. We've become such a throwaway society. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Robert, I want to thank you very much for the call. We got to take a break, but you really hit the nail on the head, I think, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
Subsistence is a significant part of the lives of many Alaskans. If it's important to you, consider applying for a seat on your local Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. The councils provide vital information to the Federal Subsistence Board on subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing. The deadline to apply is February 17th. Call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov for more information. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. alaskapublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
Man, every time we do this subject of energy, we learn stuff, and especially we got some guests to learn stuff from, this time Jason McLennan and Mark Masteller. And Christopher has just sent an email, said, I grew up in a 1,000-square-foot log house with five others. Somehow we survived. Try getting a building loan for a higher-cost, energy-efficient home when lenders want to give you money to build based on square foot and number of baths. More is better to the banks. As there it is right there.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth in that. We are financing the wrong set of values often, and the market is rewarding that. And we saw in the recent housing bubble that it's kind of fantasy.
So do we? What do we need? Do we need an innovative banker like maybe even the AHFC would get into and say, okay, we're gonna. They do some of this. They do have some standards on energy efficiency now at AHFC.
We actually met with the AHFC staff yesterday to talk about, you know, ways. And one of the subjects that came up was how can we start to interact with the lender community? You know, how can we start to develop either some stretch goals or some incentive programs that can allow people to get the kind of financing to do this type of work? But, you know, there's a... It's a conservative community, as I mentioned, and things change slowly. But
well, one of the things is the bank's going to worry about, you know, maybe not AHFC, but even they would have some concern. A bank's going to worry about the resale value of the property. I mean, that's the first thing. I mean, you start doing things too weird there, and who's going to want to buy it?
Right.
That's the way they look
at
it.
Well, that's the way they look at it, and they look for comparables that already exist. So
yeah.
You keep going back to what's already there rather
that's
than
catch
new money.
22, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Yeah. Let's keep doing the same because that's all we know.
Yeah.
And it's part of the problem. It's a big part of the problem. We have no way to value a lot of the things that we're talking about. So somebody puts solar panels on the roof, but they won't necessarily get a higher appraisal value for it. But if they add a third stall in their garage, well, that'll add up to something. And, you know, one of them is cost negative and the other actually will make you money.
Yeah, and you get to that third bathroom and all of a sudden you have to have that big huge tank.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to David in Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, David.
I heard someone from Kenai mention wood boilers, and I live in Fairbanks, and they are a real scourge here. If you set out to invent a machine to make smoke, you would want to contact these people, because it is quite unbelievable the amount of smoke that they're capable of putting out. And we've got it. You know, we're the only non-attainment area in the state. We have some areas of just incredibly bad air. And I think this whole wood thing points out how something that is potentially good, wood, is, you know, a carbon neutral, very readily available, inexpensive fuel source, can be terribly abused. And
but how are you going to tell the guy that made that big investment for that big boiler there that there's external costs he didn't think about?
12 cords of wood a year.
Yeah.
How does he stack and split his wood? He gets they get semi loads of trees, and they go to they have a stack 8 feet. I'll say this: there are people who do it. You know, I know one guy actually does cut and split his wood, but most people, they cut off the end of those trees and they put them in round. They don't eat, you know, they're not split, they're green, and they're putting them in, and they're getting 50% or less efficiency, but they don't have any work into it, and the wood is cheap. And you know what? The rest of us are bearing the cost of their inexpensive fuel.
Yep,
David,
absolutely.
David, we're out of time, but that was a great rant.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's more, but thank you
know.
Very much.
I'm sure there's more. So when does the public get to see the winner or the finalists, or how's that going to work with these Aleutian Building Challenge?
So we're going to unveil the winners in May.
Coming
right up at a large conference that we run called Living Future. It's in Portland, May 2nd to the 4th. It's an amazing event, and the winners will be unveiled there, and then we'll be making the best entries available online for people to look at, and I hope that we will produce some boards that can go on display for the public in some place to be determined.
And then it's just a matter of how many do we build, where in the Aleutians? Wait a minute. Where does anybody live in the Aleutians anyway?
This particular place is, they've got a building they're replacing in Atka, community of Atka, 61 people. So that'll be where they start. And, you know, a lot of after we're done with the design competition, it's up to Aleutian Housing Authority to take over on some of that.
That's great. So much to talk about. So little time. We're out of it. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us on, Steve.
Jason, Mark.
My pleasure.
Thanks also to our staff of Dave Waldron and Josh Edge. Next week, Lori Townsend will be doing this show. Thanks for listening. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. Good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by ConocoPhillips Alaska and Mattsu Health Foundation. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.